Good evening. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday night, February 11th, 2021. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. On our show tonight, thinking about the next 5 years in Northwest Arkansas, the Walton Family Foundation released its five-year strategy for working with foundations and nonprofit organizations earlier this week. We find out how the five-year plan dovetails with Northwest Arkansas. That conversation just ahead. A program reminder, NPR's live coverage of the impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump in the United States Senate is scheduled to begin again tomorrow morning at 11, meaning we'll alter our daytime programming again tomorrow. The first broadcast of Fresh Air and Ozarks at Large will be preempted, as will tomorrow's Science Friday. Schedules do change, however, so stay in touch. Go to KUAF.com. Speaking of KUAF.com, you can find gavel-to-gavel coverage of the entire impeachment trial process there. Governor Asa Hutchinson says mitigation efforts to slow the spread of COVID-19 in Arkansas appear to be helping contribute to a slowing of new cases in the state. Arkansas's diagnosed new cases for the past week have continued to remain flat or decrease, though the governor did express concern about the continued number of deaths from the virus when he spoke at this week's press briefing about COVID-19. The governor tweeted yesterday that while numbers are dropping, the virus can spread rapidly, and continuing to wear masks, to stay socially distanced, and follow other familiar strategies is just as important now as it was during a spike in cases earlier this year. Oklahoma's State Department of Health is reporting an additional 48 deaths from COVID-19 in today's count. Over the past 3 days, there have been 101 deaths added to that state's total. The report late this morning did include some positive numbers. The 7-day rolling average of new daily cases in Oklahoma continues to drop. That figure is now below 1,800. There is now a race for the Republican nomination for Arkansas's Attorney General in 2022. Leon Jones Jr. of Texarkana says he'll seek the party's nomination. He practices law and has been the director of the state's Fair Housing Commission since July 2019. He joins Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin in that race. Griffin announced this week he's leaving his effort to become the GOP nominee for governor to run for the Attorney General's office. More than 40 proposed constitutional amendments have been filed in an effort to be referred to the 2022 ballot by the state legislature. No more than 3 can receive the legislature's recommendation to be in front of voters, though. The proposals include a bill titled the Arkansas Religious Freedom Amendment, bills regarding the size of the Arkansas Supreme Court, bills that would conduct how primary elections are handled, a bill that would have a revision of duties of state constitutional offers, and a measure that would require proposed amendments need 60% of the popular vote to pass instead of the current 50%. Another game, another top 20 opponent for the Arkansas Razorback women's basketball team tonight. Arkansas faces number 18 Mississippi State at 8 o'clock. The Razorbacks are coming off of a last-second 2-point loss to number 7 Texas A&M in College Station on Sunday. Tonight's game is the 9th contest this year against a top 20 opponent. None of the last 4 games in the regular season, beginning with Sunday's game at LSU, are against teams currently ranked. And yes, the cold weather is here, and the National Weather Service says it will get colder before it gets warmer. Clouds are in the forecast for tonight, lows in the mid-20s tonight, wind chills as low as 7 in northwest Arkansas. Clouds tomorrow with highs from 29 to 35. Friday night, still cloudy, lows from 14 to 22. Wind chills as low as 4 in northwest Arkansas. Weekend lows will be well below freezing. There are chances of snow developing Sunday afternoon. This is Ozarks at Large for a cold Thursday night. Thank you for taking time to be with us this evening. Earlier this week, the Walton Family Foundation unveiled a plan for working with foundations and nonprofits for the next 5-year grant-making cycle. The strategy coincides with a conference the foundation hosted virtually that ended earlier today. The plan places a priority on three goals: championing community-driven change, collaboration with partners, and placing specific attention on diversity, equity, and inclusion in the grants the foundation makes. The priorities will extend into the three main areas of concentration: the environment, K-12 education, and the home regions of Northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas-Mississippi Delta. This week, we spoke with Karen Minkle, Home Region Program Director, about how the priorities will relate to the foundation's work in Northwest Arkansas for the next 5 years.
I think the theme of inclusivity is exactly right. This strategy is really based on this vision of being one of the most vibrant and inclusive communities in the nation. And as we look at where our region has been and where it's going over the last 5-10 years, we know that it's on an upward trajectory, particularly when it comes to our economic and cultural vibrancy. We also know that not all groups in the region are reaping the benefits of that success. We think that in order to be a truly vibrant community, that inclusivity is going to be key. And I think the strategy really lays out the initiatives that we think will help get us there and where the foundation can do its part.
What are just a couple of examples of ways we can become more inclusive and make sure that more people thrive in Northwest Arkansas?
I would just mention two of the strategies. One is tied to regional affordability. For people who are moving to this region from major metro areas around the country, this region will feel affordable. And in fact, there are many places where you can live in our two-county area that where you know you can buy housing at a pretty affordable price. The issue is, as we grow, we are seeing that housing is becoming less affordable. And it's not, and the housing that is affordable is not in close proximity to major employment centers, services, and amenities. We know that if people live in closer proximity to those things, that is access to opportunity on many different fronts. So as we think about our region growing and developing, really thinking about how we can ensure that you have a region of mixed income neighborhoods where everyone has access to the employment services and amenities, and that they can easily access them via multiple modes of transportation. So I think that's one example of a strategy we're working closely on. A second one is what we're calling inclusive shared spaces and experiences. So it gets at this idea of sense of belonging and how do you cultivate that? And part of it is having places where people feel welcome and can connect with people from different backgrounds in a meaningful way. And part of that is also through the experiences that you have. And when we think about arts and culture, thinking about the narratives that are being told, right, as part of arts and culture and the stories that are being shared. I think what we know is that there are rich narratives in this region. We don't hear about all of them all the time. So I think there's a real effort to think about, you know, what are the places and spaces where people can come together and create meaningful connections? And then also, how are we celebrating and elevating the many different narratives in our region that really make us who we are?
Part of the challenge, or not, I would say part of the assignment for Northwest Arkansas then is those who do have a sense of belonging to make conscious efforts to try to figure out who doesn't feel that way and how those who do feel a sense of belonging can make sure those who don't feel more at home here.
So I would say two things to that. One is, I think that when you're in the majority, you know, whatever that mm-hmm. might be, right, there is kind of this, there is a responsibility there. But I would also say this, I think it's inclusion both ways. And I say this because, you know, we've begun outreach to stakeholders who may or may not have had as big a role in our prior strategies, just to get to understand all the different pockets of our community. And when I was talking with my team about this, I said, you know, it's an interesting feeling because in some ways, I am reaching out to various leaders in different groups, and I'm asking them to include me in their conversations. And I say that representing a foundation with incredible resources working in this community. So I think their efforts kind of both ways, right? I think they're, yes, when you're in the majority group, I think there's a greater responsibility there. But I also think it's kind of sort of recognizing that there are many different groups in this region and that it is important to approach different groups with the sense of, I think, inquiry and wanting to learn more. Because in some ways you are also asking to be accepted into those conversations and build trust in a meaningful way.
Some plans, some strategy plans are business plans, and you put those out for 5 years and a business tries to figure out where they're going to be. That's hard sometimes to do when you've got something like a pandemic. Was this five-year strategy at all different to come up with because we're right now in a pandemic and we're not sure where the other side or what the other side is?
You know, here's the thing about the strategy. It was under development for well over a year before its adoption. So the themes that we're seeing that I think the pandemic has highlighted, those were trends before COVID. I think the strategy is even more relevant today than it would have been a year ago. Because of all of the things we've seen on a global national scale, I think that Strat 25 is attempting to address and mitigate those challenges at a local level. I think those were the trends before COVID. I think COVID has revealed them, and I think it gives a sense of urgency to the work in a way that might not have been as tangible prior to the pandemic.
You know, when you hear Strat 25, on one hand, it sounds far away because this is 21. On the other hand, you and I could be having a conversation seemingly tomorrow about Strat 30 or something. I mean, this is going to go by in a hurry.
Yeah, you know, it's astonishing to me that we have wrapped up a five-year strategy, because I think of all the change that has occurred in that period of time. And I don't know, for me, I feel a sense of even greater acceleration. So whatever changes we saw over the last 5 years, I can imagine that, you know, we're going to see double, triple that in the next five. So I guess to my earlier point, it does create a sense of urgency because that time goes by so quickly, and these are ambitious plans.
Finally, will members of the general public notice parts of the strategy being implemented or discussed?
I absolutely hope so, because some of them will be, you know, things that you can easily see or hear or read about. My hope would be that there are also things that are less tangible, but that people feel, right? Which is trickier to measure. But, you know, I think we're talking about the connective tissue and how you really strengthen that tissue so that you have a resilient community. And that strengthening, whenever you're mixing my metaphors now, but you're creating that connective tissue or building a muscle, I think the changes are less visible in an incremental way. But the hope would be that 5 years from now, you've changed feelings, right? You've impacted sort of hearts, I think, in a way that may not be as visually dramatic as a new building, but that is just equally important to the health of the region.
Karen Minkle is the Home Region Program Director for the Walton Family Foundation. The foundation this week released a strategy for the next 5-year grant-making cycle. The foundation says it plans to provide more than $2 billion in philanthropic gifts in the next 5 years. We also talked with Carol Stern, the director of the foundation, about the strategy plan, and we'll hear that conversation next week on our show. And the release of the strategy coincided with a conference that was hosted virtually by the foundation. It ended earlier today. During that conference, I was asked to moderate a panel about diversity and inclusivity in Northwest Arkansas, and that, too, will be part of a future edition of Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is supported by Park Lane Family Dental, offering dental wellness with an emphasis on restorative and cosmetic dentistry for more than 30 years. With offices in Fort Smith and Rogers, Park Lane follows CDC-recommended protocol for COVID prevention. ParkLaneDental.com for information or to schedule an appointment. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art is open each Wednesday through Monday. To maintain social distancing and follow COVID-19 safety protocols, free time ticket reservations are required for entry to the museum. No tickets are needed for the outdoor access of the museum's trails and grounds, which are open from sunrise to sunset. Tickets and more information available at crystalbridges.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. In December, the Greenwood Bulldog football team won its 10th state championship, this under a new coach. It was part of a perfect 14-0 season. The team commemorated the occasion with state championship rings, and the players wanted to make sure everyone was recognized, including Jamie Freeman, the Greenwood High football team janitor.
Head coach Christian says, "Hey, Jamie, we want you to be at the ring ceremony."
Freeman, who has cerebral palsy, has been with the team since 2019. When he showed up at last week's ceremony, he says the players pretended to gift him a baseball hat.
"So I grabbed the hat off the table, and I can see that there's a ring under the hat, which I thought was kind of odd, but didn't give a second thought that the ring was for me."
Freeman describes the moment as surreal and says the ring speaks to the character of the players and the coaches in Greenwood.
"They don't only think about themselves, but they're willing to think about others as well. I think it speaks to a sense of family and community among the Greenwood football program."
Freeman says he also hopes the ring means he's made a positive impact on the players. He says he's always enjoyed sports and would have loved to have been able to play growing up, but he wasn't able to because he was born with cerebral palsy.
"But now to be able to be a part of this team, it is kind of, it just means a lot."
Freeman shared his joy in a Facebook photo and post that reads, "I'm not a player or coach, yet greatly enjoy serving the Greenwood football program as their janitor. I was humbled today as they shared their state championship with me by gifting me with a ring." Needless to say, his post went viral and was shared by ESPN SportsCenter. Freeman says the response has been as unexpected as getting that championship ring.
I've got to remind myself that I'm awake, you know, and not just dreaming all of this up. And I think it really strikes a chord, especially because of all the difficulties maybe of the last year. This kind of kindness, I think it strikes a chord with people.
And Freeman says he wears the ring as often as he can to share it and share the story behind it with others. This is Ozarks at Large.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Earlier this week, a financial technology company that is based in California announced it would create 100 new jobs with a new office in Bentonville. Coming up on today's program, we will discuss that news with entrepreneur Hayes Barnard, who's the co-founder and CEO of that California company, LoanPal. We've also got details of an important milestone for a medical device startup in Fayetteville, and the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal is seeking nominations of qualified honorees for its annual recognition programs in 2021. We've got all that for you after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
California-based software company LoanPal, that's a point-of-sale payment platform, plans to open a new operating center in Bentonville, and that will create more than 100 new jobs. LoanPal is the nation's leading technology platform for residential solar loans. The company was founded in 2003 and since then has processed more than $28 billion in financing to more than 175,000 customers. In Bentonville, the company has signed a multi-year lease to occupy the former space of The Holler at the 8th Street Market. Now, that office will only be temporary while LoanPal develops plans to establish a permanent office space in the region. LoanPal's Bentonville office should open in early March. To discuss that move, I spoke with LoanPal co-founder, chairman, and CEO Hayes Barnard to find out more.
Now, when did Bentonville start to get on your radar, and maybe a bit more importantly, why? I mean, you can launch an office anywhere in the country. Why is Northwest Arkansas a good match?
Well, I'll tell you, I made a trip out there this summer for the first time and got on my mountain bike and rode those trails and just fell in love with it. And just the community, the people, just the entire kind of vibe, just the work ethic. And it reminds me of where I'm from. I'm from Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri. So you know what it's like when you're in the heartland, you can feel that positive energy. And I definitely just said, okay, I want to open an office here. I want to come here, you know, myself more often. These are the kind of people I want to come work for our company.
Right. So as I understand it, the 8th Street Market space is a lease and kind of a temporary office, but you are going to work on finding somewhere to set down permanent roots, a permanent office for LoanPal in the market. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, look, we're in it for the long haul. When we come into a city like Bentonville, you know, we're there to stay. Now, typically, we'll outgrow our space in a relatively short period of time. So that location there, as you know, is so perfectly located right there next to the Momentary and some great restaurants. So we chose that location for now to kind of build out this first 100 person group of folks. And then we'll actively be looking for other locations in the future as we scale.
Sure. And you may be able to start your own office shuffleboard league before you move out of there as well.
Happy employees. And to be honest with you, that's one of the things I love most about Bentonville. They found that balance between the great education systems that are there for the kids to the work-life balance that you have where you can be on your bike with your kids out there on a ride at 5:15, enjoying those trails. And I like that. You know, I want folks that want to work for us for a long period of time, that want to do good while they're doing well, but I also want them to have a good quality of life. And I think Bentonville brings that to the table.
So will come 100 new jobs you'll be hiring from this market. I know a lot of people here who will view that as a big vote of confidence that you feel like your company will be able to find the quality and the quantity of tech talent that you need here in Northwest Arkansas. I know that had to be important to you as well.
Yeah, it was. You know, I came in, we did a lot of research. It wasn't like we just showed up and made a swift decision. You had some good conversations with the governor, looked at the University of Arkansas and some of the programs they have around technology and data analytics, and said, okay, these universities are going to create talent that wants to focus in ESG, environmental social governance. The state's committed to powering itself on clean energy. So I think that there's going to be kind of a conscious state of mind of people inspired about these technologies and how to apply these technologies. And clearly, other companies like Walmart or Tyson Foods or J.B. Hunt have proven you can build incredibly successful companies in Bentonville. So it became a real obvious choice for me.
I mean, you're a multi-billion dollar lender with a niche of that renewable energy and sustainable home improvement lending, solar lending. So where do you see that market right now? How would you describe it? Is the demand still booming, just going up and up and away?
We're right in the center of two things. You know, environmental social governance, we're smack in the center of that movement and people thinking through, you know, what's a better way to power their home, what's a better way to power their car. We're also right in the middle of fintech and all the technology that's taking place there. And so we're not a lender. Let me explain just a little bit about the technology and what it does. We're really a digital conduit. All we do is connect banks that want to finance these ESG assets with contractors that want to deploy them. And ultimately, homeowners win. Homeowners are in a position where they can you know, install these products on their home, live more sustainably, and save money from day one. Literally, it's zero down financing that the banks offer. So we feel like it can scale very quickly. There's lots of folks that want to put people to work in good jobs to install these systems. These are jobs that can't be outsourced, you know, right here in America. And then the banks are saying, look, we want to finance more ESG. We want to be part of this asset class. So if you really think about the tech, think about it no different than Airbnb created a job in a phone where you could list your property and someone else could rent it. And they created that connection point, or Uber gave you a job in the phone where you could drive an Uber car and be connected to somebody who is going to want that ride. We do the same thing. That's what our job in the phone is. It's a piece of technology that allows you to participate in the clean energy revolution and create that connection point between contractors that want to install those systems and banks that want to finance them.
You mentioned the word scale. When do you anticipate having these jobs filled here in Northwest Arkansas? When do you expect to get to that, you know, 100 or 110 number?
Yeah, that's a good question. Usually we'll start off with about 50 people within the first few months, and most of those jobs will be hired right in Bentonville. So I'll move a handful of people, very senior people from California into the market and to help kind of seed the office, make sure we get the culture right, and then we'll start hiring.
That's Hayes Barnard there. He's a co-founder and the CEO of California software company LoanPal. You can read more about their plans in Bentonville at nwabusinessjournal.com. Also on our website, you can read about Fayetteville medical device startup Lapovations, the most successful startup competition team in University of Arkansas history. The company is now registered with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. It's launched its flagship product, AbGrab, and recorded the first U.S. sale of that product. AbGrab is a medical device that is used to lift the abdominal wall at the start of laparoscopic surgery. And another year at the Business Journal means it's time for you to get those nominations into us for our 2021 award programs. We're seeking nominations for our Fast 15, Women in Business, 40 Under 40, and the C-Suite. The earliest date you'll want to mark on your calendar is March 15th. That's the nomination deadline coming up for the Fast 15. You can make those nominations and find more information online under the Best in Class tab at nwabusinessjournal.com. I'm Paul Gatling, and that is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Free help with tax preparation will begin tomorrow in Fort Smith. WestArk RSVP is a local organization with adults 55 and older who volunteer. The group is partnering with Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, or VITA, and TCE, the Tax Counseling for the Elderly program, to provide the free assistance weekdays at the RSVP Center at 401 North 13th in Fort Smith. The help is available for families with incomes under $57,000, or for residents 60 or older, regardless of income. Volunteers on hand are trained to help prepare free federal and Arkansas and Oklahoma state returns. There is a form to be completed before the prep assistance. That form can be found 24 hours a day in plastic bins outside the RSVP office. There are also forms the volunteers need you to bring with them to prepare taxes. You can find out much more information by calling 782-2525. WestArk RSVP plans to have a Rogers tax site ready on February 18th. A bit of help is being offered to military veterans, active military personnel, their spouses, and children seeking a degree in agriculture. The Homegrown by Heroes academic scholarships are for $1,000, provided by Farm Credit. Applications and more information can be found by navigating agriculture.arkansas.gov. Deadline to apply, March 26th. The NAACP Northwest Arkansas branch hosting a Founders Day celebrating 112 years event tomorrow night at 7. It's open to the public, it's virtual, and it will feature guest speaker Kwame Abdul-Bey. He's with the Arkansas Peace and Justice Memorial Movement in Little Rock. Barry Jefferson, president of Jacksonville NAACP, and Roanne Elliott with the Washington County Remembrance Project will also speak. You can find out more by sending an email to nwanaacp@gmail.com. Our friends in Winslow, the Ozark Folkways Group, have added to ozarkfolkways.org. Now there is an online gallery there featuring work of local artists and craftspeople. Purchase of work is possible. Delivery can be done by mail or by pickup. The gallery at ozarkfolkways.org. Plenty of collegiate athletics this week. The John Brown University basketball teams have a challenging schedule. Both teams are scheduled to play in Waxahachie, Texas, tomorrow night against Southwestern AG. Then be ready to play in Fort Worth the day after against Texas Wesleyan. The women will have Sunday off then, but will head north to Point Lookout, Missouri for a game against College of the Ozarks Monday evening. UAFS women have had their Friday and Saturday basketball games at the University of Texas at Tyler postponed for COVID-19 protocol reasons. No rescheduling date has yet been set. The men's basketball games will take place as scheduled. And the UAFS baseball games at Angelo State University this weekend also postponed. But not because of the virus, but due to that traditional enemy of college baseball, weather in February. The Arkansas Razorback softball team in Monroe, Louisiana for the opening tournament of the season. The first home game for the softball team. It's actually a doubleheader scheduled for February 25th against North Dakota State. North Dakota State players probably think we're having summer right now. The Razorback gymnastic team is at Kentucky tomorrow. The indoor track teams are hosting the Tyson Invitational this weekend in Fayetteville. And the Arkansas volleyball team continues its spring schedule at home Friday and Saturday matches against Alabama in Barnhill Arena.
One, two, one, two, three.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. Imani Winds, a Grammy-nominated ensemble, started in 2000 as a group of friends, classically trained musicians of color, determined to make a statement about representation in the arts and determined to be role models for children and young musicians that look like them. Since its beginning, Imani Winds has led both a revolution and the evolution of the Wind Quintet through their dynamic playing, adventurous programming, imaginative collaborations, and outreach endeavors that have inspired audiences of all ages and backgrounds.
Thank you.
That was Imani Wins interpreting excerpts from composer Valerie Coleman's piece, Portraits of Josephine Baker, First Movement All St. Louis, a musical memoir dedicated to Josephine Baker, an American-born French entertainer, French resistance agent, and civil rights activist. The four-movement work written by former Imani Wynn flutist Valerie Coleman chronicles Baker's life, humor, and quick rise to fame. Imani Wynn is committed to education and participates in residencies through the U.S., giving performances and master classes to thousands of students each year. Academic and institutional residencies include the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, Duke University, the University of Chicago, Curtis Institute of Music, the University of Michigan, the Camera of Houston, and numerous others across the country. We in Fayetteville have been touched by their mission, too. Imani visited us in 2017, brought by the Walton Arts Center for a concert with composer Edward Simon and Afinidad. While here, Imani visited schools and worked with our University of Arkansas Music Department students, and it was a very inspiring experience for all. That was Imani Wynn in performance with Afinidad, representing the jazz and classical worlds, respectively, fulfilling composer Edward Simon's goal of integrating orchestral instruments into a jazz setting. Afinidad featured Simon on piano alongside with saxophonist David Binney, bassist Scott Colley, and drummer Brian Blake. Imani Wynn, flutist Brandon Patrick George, oboist Toyin Spellman-Diaz, French hornist Jeff Scott, clarinetist Mark Dover, and bassoonist Monica Ellis are committed to traditional chamber music repertoire and, as a 21st century group, also to expanding the Wynn Quintet repertoire by commissioning music from new voices that reflect historical events and the times in which we currently live. In the wake of race equity conversations after the killing of George Floyd, Imani Wynn's musicians Toyin Spellman-Diaz and Monica Ellis have participated in several panels addressing their experiences as Black musicians. If interested in these conversations, you will find some links to those panels in the program notes. So much work to do, and so many amazing and awesome musicians fighting out there for social justice with their strongest and most beautiful tool, their music, and their ability to change dynamics in their own platforms. We close this segment today with American modernist composer Elliot Carter's Woodwind Quintet, written in 1948, performed by Imani Wynn. This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
next Tuesday evening, the next Honors College Preview Lecture from the University of Arkansas will cover a topic that has become very familiar, conspiracy theories. Ryan Neville Shepherd, an assistant professor of communication, will give the lecture. It's a preview to his University of Arkansas Honors College signature seminar, Conspiracy Theory, that he'll lead next semester. We're going to hear much more from him on Monday's Ozarks at Large, but here is a sneak preview of a conversation that we had late last month about conspiracy theories.
Okay, but this has been happening for a long time.
Really?
Right? So when we look at the history of conspiracy theories, I think there are really important moments where the fragmented conspiracy culture came together to believe in a big one.
Okay.
And so you had already talked about the JFK conspiracy theories. I think that was the mother of all conspiracy theories in the 20th century that brought a lot of people together from the sort of fringe corners of the world. After JFK, I think we saw the rise of another conspiracy culture with the 9/11 truth movement.
Loose change
was when I talk about democratized media and how easy it is to create your own film on YouTube and make it go viral. Loose change is what I'm talking about. That was created by a couple of college students who thought they're going to tell a fictional tale, but then it resonated with a number of people. And then you have this 9/11 truth movement that got really, really big. After that, I think you have the birther movement. And then you have, I think, a burgeoning anti-vaccine movement that's always existed, but that's getting bigger with Andrew Wakefield's stardom and the anti-vaccine, I guess we could call it propaganda, that he's created. But I do think QAnon is just a continuation of a lot of other blips of conspiracy culture. It's just that it's united a somewhat different base of conspiracy believers. I also think the militia movement has gravitated toward that because of its anti-democratic politics.
It would seem it would just be so much easier. What is it? Occam's razor. The most logical explanation or the simplest one is usually the one that is true. It just seems it would be so much easier not to delve into these very complicated, high-concept conspiracies.
But for some people, it's the game to sort of prove what cannot, like, technically be proven. So I think of it almost as the worst form of sophistry, making the best case seem worse or the worst case seem better. For a lot of people, especially like the flat earthers, they relish the opportunity to try to prove to you that the world is actually flat. I don't know that they actually believe it, but they love playing the game. And so for conspiracy theories, it's about proving what cannot be proven and providing a lot of evidence to try to convince somebody of what they think is an alternative narrative of how the world works.
When you research the history of conspiracy theories, is it interesting to find out where they may have come from? You mentioned anti-vaxxers, and there was the article in the medical journal The Lancet that was later disavowed, but that sort of gave folks a rise. And QAnon can get sort of traced back to the Pizzagate thing in Washington, D.C. Is it interesting to try to go back and find the origins of some of these?
Well, I think the origins start with the people who believe them, right? So I introduced the term a conspiracy entrepreneur, somebody who is the first to propose a counter narrative that becomes popular. I think the 9/11 truth movement is a great example of that because they created Loose Change, a film that they thought was fictional, and then they kept adding more and more content and found a widespread following. It always starts with somebody who creates that message, but it has to find an audience that's receptive to the message. And that's going to come at very specific times. It's going to come at a time of major political polarization, especially when one party loses a lot of power and the other party comes into power. Typically, you'll see conspiracy theories peak at that moment. That's true for 9/11. That's true for the birther movement. And I think it's true for QAnon as well.
Ryan Neville Shepherd is an assistant professor of communication at the University of Arkansas. Tuesday night at 5:15, he'll deliver a Zoom Honors College preview lecture titled Conspiracy Theory. Next semester, he'll teach a U of A Honors College signature seminar with the same title. We'll hear much more from our conversation on Monday's Ozarks at Large.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. Any way of describing this past year feels like an understatement. But I hope that during these unpredictable and devastating times, you've been able to count on KUAF. If you value the news reports and interviews you hear on KUAF, please show your support today by giving at supportkuaf.com. Thank you so much.
Terry Gross and Fresh Air, usually every weekday at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 91.3, right before Ozarks at Large each time. But this week, and maybe early next week, with the special coverage from NPR of the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate, the 11 a.m. broadcasts are being preempted. Special coverage, by the way, does continue tomorrow morning from NPR, again beginning at 11. You can also catch Fresh Air Weekend every Sunday night at 6. Speaking of the weekends, great locally produced music programs throughout the weekend on KUAF. Paul Kelso and the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9. Then after that, Robert Ginsburg and Shades of Jazz. That's the longest running radio program in Northwest Arkansas. Begins every Friday night at 10. Speaking of long running, Mike Shirky's The Pick and Post, the second longest running radio show in Northwest Arkansas, can be heard each Saturday night at 7. Other shows on Saturday on KUAF include the wide variety that you can hear on the KUAF Vinyl Hour. That's Saturday evenings at 5. Ozark Highlands Radio from Mountain View begins at 6, right after the Vinyl Hour. Saturday night at 9, Arkansas Red has If This Ain't Country. That's followed by The Jazz Scoop with Rob Wells. Each of those shows can also be heard for an encore presentation on KUAF 3. That's available at KUAF.com for free on your HD radio in your home or in your car, or by asking your smart speaker to please play KUAF 3. And when KUAF 3 doesn't have the encores of the locally produced music programs, it's jazz around the clock. Speaking of around the clock, classical music all the time on KUAF 2. That too on your HD radio, your smart speaker, or at KUAF.com.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Over the phone today, we're joined with Carol Martin Longwell with NWA Gives. Carol, nice to talk to you again.
It's terrific to talk to you as well.
A nonprofit that works to help nonprofits. Tell us about NWA Gives.
Sure. So we aim to inspire Northwest Arkansas to become the most generous place in America. And we do this by hosting a giving day this year on April the 8th, and we ask the community to give generously to their local nonprofits. And then we provide those nonprofits with training and resources so they can become better fundraisers. And that way they can support our community even better and make sure we meet everyone's needs. Everything from the arts to food insecurity and everything in between, they need a lot of money, especially during the pandemic, to make sure that everyone has what they need.
This year's NWA Gives Day, again, that's coming up April 8th. Y'all have got a couple of different things taking place this week. In fact, tomorrow you've got something taking place. Friday, what's going on?
We sure do. So at lunch tomorrow, we hope that all our nonprofits will join us for some fundraising basics. We're giving our first webinar to help them out with their fundraising skills at noon. They can see it on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or they can email me, Carol, at nwagives.org and ask for a link so they can join our Zoom call.
Then on Sunday, kind of something neat to end the week or begin the next week, a Cupid's drawing. What's going to be taking place on Sunday?
So to encourage nonprofits to participate, First Security Bank has offered a lot of prize money. And so if they register by Valentine's Day, we're going to sweeten the pot with $250 for an organization that will draw from a hat.
But again, don't forget that date of April 8th coming up later this spring, NWA Gives Day. We've been speaking with Carol Martin Longwell with NWA Gives. Okay, Carol, somebody wants to know more about the April 8th event, things that are taking place later this week. What's the best way?
They need to go to nwagives.org and check us out. And don't forget to make sure that your favorite nonprofit has registered.
Carol, thanks for letting us know what's going on.
Thanks, Pete.
The Community Spotlight and KUAF, local matters.
All right, young violin, viola, cello, and double bass players, and by young, I mean 14 to 18 years of age, you have a chance to meet faculty, alumni, and students at the University of Arkansas while learning more about the U of A Strings program. This is all going to take place on February 26th. It's virtual from noon until 2. It's the University of Arkansas Virtual Strings Workshop. It is free, but registration is required. Viola, cello, and bass students will attend a masterclass taught by U of A professors, and you'll be encouraged to perform a piece of your choosing. The instructors will ensure a safe environment for performers, or you can choose to audit the masterclass if you'd like. If you have any questions, you can contact Natasha Riley, cms@uark.edu, or, old school, you can leave a voicemail at 575-6491. Again, the University of Arkansas Virtual Strings Workshop, scheduled for February 26, 2021, from noon until 2 on Zoom.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Central Arkansas Library System presents Neil Irvin Painter, author of Creating Black Americans, African American History and Its Meanings, 1619 to the Present, Thursday, February 18th at 6:30 p.m. This virtual event is free and open to the public. Registration and information available at cals.org.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Hackett. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Contributors to this Thursday night show included Leah Uribe and Zuzana Sitek. Zuzana delivering sound and information about that high school football championship ring in Greenwood. Today's show produced by Timothy Dennis at his home studio in downtown Fayetteville. Sound Perimeter with Leah Uribe, produced by Lee Wood. The Community Spotlight, produced by Pete Hartman inside the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, also in downtown Fayetteville. And our theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find Daryl's music online wherever you find online music. You can often find Daryl around 4 o'clock our time performing live on his Facebook and Instagram feeds. And if you're online, you can go to any of the major podcast distributors and subscribe for free to the podcast edition of Daily Ozarks at Large. And if you would like to keep up with what's on the show every weekday, you can do that through the, again, absolutely free KUAF Ozarks at Large daily email newsletter. Sign up at KUAF.com, and we send you an email just once every afternoon. It lists everything that was on the show that day and provides easy-to-access links that allow you to click through and listen to the story or interview. No noon show tomorrow. NPR's live coverage of the impeachment trial in the United States Senate of former President Donald Trump scheduled to begin tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. We do anticipate being with you tomorrow night, a Friday night, a cold Friday night at 7 o'clock. You can find out more about us at ozarksatlarge.com. More about KUAF at KUAF.com. Thanks so much for being with us. Please stay warm. Check on your pets. Check on your neighbors. Get rest when you can. I'm Kyle Kellums. Talk to you again real soon.